Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 9, No Way Out is over, but we're just getting started here on the first ever Walking Dead Book Club. It's happening, people. Oh my God. Hello, everyone. I'm Josh Klinger. Very excited. Very, very, very excited. Walking Dead Book Club is here. You've been asking for it. If you're listening to this, it's probably because you've been asking for this podcast for a long time. We are finally doing it. We are at that point on the show, on The Walking Dead, where we really got to be talking about this thing from a comic book perspective. And we've been waiting for the right co-anchor for this thing. She has arrived. The only other person on the planet who probably appreciated my I joke on Sunday night's Walking Dead live show. It's Jessica Leese. Jessica, what's going on?
Well, I knew that joke was just for me, for starters.
It really was. It was for you, and maybe I thought I'd get a reaction out of Rob, but I knew that only like maybe 10 other people would know what I was doing. I don't think that the crossover between Amazing Race and Walking Dead is huge.
There's really not. Like, you know, I can't do, I'm pretty sure we're not going to be doing a San Juan del Terminus style Amazing Race Walking Dead remix.
That's up to you. Pitch that to Rob. He would be in it.
Oh, I know he'd be in, but, you know, Race of Thrones was almost a bridge too far. This might be too weird.
But there's lots of great locations that you could travel to in an Amazing Race type of podcast about Walking Dead. Like, you could visit Terminus. You could visit Woodbury.
Yeah.
Alexandria is, but I mean, it really would all just be foot travel around the Georgia region.
Yeah,
pretty
and
much.
The gross food challenge would be pretty yeah. gross.
It would be really, really nasty on The Walking Dead. Jess, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so psyched to talk about this. This is gonna be so fun.
It's going to be really, really fun. You know, it's definitely been a podcast that people have asked about in the past. We do a Game of Thrones book club for our Game of Thrones podcast between me and Terry Schwartz. Terry Schwartz is a big fan of the Game of Thrones books. I'm a big fan of the books as well. I've been, you know, kind of looking around to see who's a big fan of the Walking Dead comics if we're going to be doing this podcast. And Jess, I knew that you were binging Walking Dead as a show. I was chronicling your recent fandom of Walking Dead. It's happened pretty fast over the past, you know, month or two, I feel like. But I didn't know that you were reading the comics as well. And as soon as I saw that, you had tweeted something at me like, oh, you got to do a Walking Dead book club. And then I tweeted you like, okay, so let's do it. Let's make it happen. So here we are. It's happening.
Here we are. It's all happening.
So that's the origin story.
That's basically the origin story. I mean, we have my workplace to thank for it because my day job, I get almost 2 solid weeks off between Christmas and New Year's. And we went on vacation for a week of that, and we came back, and we heard that there was going to be a Walking Dead marathon on AMC, and we thought, well, you know, haven't watched Walking Dead. People say good things. Give it a shot. We have it on Netflix. Let's just watch a couple episodes, see how we like it, and,
right.
you know, 5 seasons later, it's been 2 weeks, and all we've done is, like, we come home at night and turn on Walking Dead, and we got up to the point where the season left off, and I said, well, now I've got 3 weeks before the show starts back up. What am I going to do? How am I going to find out what happens next? I have to find out what happens next. So then I got the comics.
So this is fun because you got into Walking Dead through the show first, and then you caught up with the show. You still had a few weeks left before Walking Dead came back, and you decided you would do the comic book thing.
Yeah, I binged the equivalent of 140 issues of the comic book in about a week and a half.
Yeah, we were just talking offline before we came on here, and Jess is through, I think, Walking Dead number 143. So you are, by my math, 8 issues shy of being completely caught up. That's really, really impressive, given how quickly you got into this story.
Yeah, well, I have no impulse control. Like, I'm a binger. If I have the next thing available, I'm going to do the next thing. And
yeah.
I don't have the kind of personality that lends itself well to reading 24 pages of a comic in a month and then waiting a month for the next one.
Yeah. So that's good. That works for me. It's interesting because I come from the comics with Walking Dead. I've been reading the comics for years before the show came on the air. One of my old jobs was I was a staff writer for Comic Book Resources, and I was covering the Image Comics beat. So I used to interview Robert Kirkman a lot back then before the show started, you know, coming together and before the show came out. So I was really heavily in on the comics back then, and I was really super excited for the show when the show was starting to build up. But my loyalty has always been to the comics first. I really, really do enjoy the show tremendously, but the comics are some of my favorite comics that get put out every month because they're just so risky and gutsy. And the show is good at that too, but I'm a comic book loyalist first. It seems like you're a show loyalist first, but we both have that intersecting knowledge. So this could be fun. You know, we could see where we might have clashing opinions on some of this stuff.
Yeah. I definitely have some strong opinions about what I like better and how you know, how much, you know, how much they take from the comics and put in the show, and how much I, you know, how much I'm glad they left out of the comics.
Yeah, sure, totally. There's definitely a lot of stuff that doesn't make it onto the show that's probably a really, really good thing. So let's just set this up really quickly. This is, you know, I do the obligatory spoiler alert on the Game of Thrones book club, and that segment typically lasts anywhere from like 5 minutes to 50 minutes. I'll try and keep it short here. If you are listening to the Walking Dead book club, and you have not read the Walking Dead comics, but you watch the Walking Dead show, proceed with caution. We are talking about all manner of spoilerific things from the Walking Dead comics and how that might impact the show as we're moving forward in season 6 and beyond. That being said, unlike Game of Thrones, which tends to be fairly faithful to at least the most important story beats, they leave out some characters, they leave out some plot lines sometimes on Game of Thrones, the show versus the Song of Ice and Fire books. Walking Dead, the show, and Walking Dead, the comics tend to be pretty different beasts. They follow, you know, fairly similar plot structures. There are certain occasions when the show is perfectly mirroring the comics, but there's a remix approach that the writers of Walking Dead talk about often, where they like to take certain aspects, iconic moments from the comics, put them on the show, and do different things with them. So, for example, the way that I'm assuming at this point, if you are listening to this, you are at least caught up with the current season of Walking Dead. If not, definitely go back now. But for example, Walking Dead season 4, mid-season finale, Herschel gets his head ripped off. He gets his head chopped off by the governor. That happens to somebody else in the comics. That's an iconic thing that happens to Tyrese. That's how Tyrese dies there. So they like to do that mix and match approach, which has made it really fun. For me, at least, I know that there's probably some people who are real comic book purists who wish that the show was a little more faithful to the comics. But for me, watching the show and knowing sort of vaguely, like, the governor's got to chop somebody's head off, but I don't feel like that the show has built Tyrese enough to really have that emotional impact. Herschel's kind of got to be the guy. So it's fun to have that approach. So that's what we're going to be getting into here in the Walking Dead book club. We're going to talk a lot about the choices that the show makes in terms of what they're leaving behind from the comics, what they're adapting very faithfully, what they're changing completely. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. I think for me, it's very similar to the Game of Thrones universe, where, especially where we're at with the Game of Thrones universe now, maybe not so much in the past, but
yeah,
where we are now in Game of Thrones, we are past where the books left off, and we have to start answering some of the questions the books left unanswered. And so what it means is that you're getting two different stories, and it's right, kind of nominally the same universe and nominally the same characters and same beats, but they're going to be told so differently. It's almost like you get to experience it twice for the first time.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really loving about also now getting into the comics here, is that I know that we're not going to get all the exact same things, but I get to find out what happens to these characters twice, and I get to experience that kind of that sense of suspense two times over. I think that's really fun.
Yeah, I think that's fun too. And, you know, unlike Game of Thrones, where that's like kind of starting to happen out of necessity, sort of late into the show's run, that's just been the case with Walking Dead, the show, and the comics from the beginning. You know, a guy like Shane lasts a lot longer on the show than he does in the comics. There's lots of things like that. Daryl Dixon does not exist in the comics. He is a show-only character. Was that a surprise for you as you started reading the comics? You're like, where's Daryl?
Well, I knew that all along.
Okay.
so that wasn't a terrible surprise. There are a couple of characters in the comics that are such a huge departure, I don't think they can logically be called the same person. Like, there right, is a Carol in the comics, but she's awful and she dies very early. So
right,
I don't even think, like, just because there was a Carol that had a daughter named Sophia, they're not the same character at all.
Right. And there's an Andrea in the comics who is a super badass and is very much still alive, who died at the end of season 3. You know, they do that a lot. You know, Dale dies so much earlier on the show than he does in the comics. So it definitely keeps you on your toes. And I think it's really fun to compare and contrast the way that the stories diverge. So we'll track all of that. Jess, since this is your first time talking Walking Dead on the podcast, let's just get some of your hot takes. Like, carve out your stance on Walking Dead. What's your take on the show as a whole? What do you like about it? Maybe some of what you don't like about it. What's sort of like your mission statement when it comes to Walking Dead?
Well, I'm always a sucker for post-apocalyptic literature in all its forms. Like, that started for me very, very early when I was like 12 or 13 reading The Stand. And after that, it's like anything I can get my hands on where it's like people trying to rebuild society. And some of the work in that genre is great and some of it is not so great. And I think this is not only fun because it's not just people trying to rebuild society and trying to cling to what they can from their old lives, but it's also with the constant threat of all of these horrible things coming down on their heads. If you let your guard down for 1 second, you get swarmed and eaten. And yeah. I think that ups the stakes considerably.
Yeah. And I think it's also, you know, the whole zombie genre. This is a story that's oftentimes zombie stories are told kind of in, you know, these concise, really quick packages, like a movie or a book. And I know that Kirkman, who wrote the comics and is an executive producer on the show, he always talks about how Walking Dead is the zombie movie that never ends. So it's just like this suspended feeling of dread about these characters that, like, you just got to imagine nothing good will ultimately happen to these people, or maybe it will, but it's going to be a very, very long time from now. So they really kind of stretch it out. It's really, you know, it's like long form torture with The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, I think a lot of really great books use this to their advantage too. It's like, what new awful thing can happen to these people? And oh, let's give them like 5 minutes where everything's okay, kind of. Oh, and now it's much, much worse than it ever was before. And now someone's getting their foot eaten.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think what's interesting is that the parts of the show that I liked the best are almost the parts that don't even show up in the comics at all.
Okay, such as?
Like, my favorite season half was probably the Road to Terminus.
Okay.
Where everybody is split off into these tiny groups, and I think a lot of ensemble cast shows do this really amazingly well, where it's just like, what happens if we take these two characters that haven't interacted much and now they're stuck with each other? Like, we're going to have like six little mini bottle episodes where all these people are trapped with each other and only each other. And how do they relate to each other? And you had these little mini groups, and then towards the end of the season, they started to find each other again. And that was just such an interesting character driven part of the story. And they had Terminus to look forward to. They didn't know that it was people eating. And they thought they were all like headed towards one common goal. And
right.
It was so fun. And I was, at the same time, I was kind of re-binging. This is a totally left field comparison.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of on a re-binge of Parks and Rec.
Okay.
Parks and Rec, yeah. Every episode does that same thing.
Right.
Where it's like, well, these two characters haven't talked to each other in a while. What would be the interesting thing we can give them to do? Where are they going to find common ground? Where are they going to clash?
Right. Let's do the Tom and Ben episode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the, or like, you know, let's put, you know, April and Craig, what do they have in common?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that you're right. I think that back half of season 4 was really fun. I liked that. I think that on the podcast, as Rob and I were talking about it, we remarked that some of it was a little slow, but I think that some of the best episodes of the show come from that portion of the show. I think, you know, we still talk about The Grove, the Carol episode with Tyrese and the deaths of Lizzie and Mika, as I think that it's widely considered as one of like the top 5 episodes of the whole show.
Oh yeah, without question. It's also where Carol kind of turns a corner.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that season is kind of Carol's breakout season. And I mean, she really breaks out when she single-handedly dismantles Terminus. But I think that The Grove, it's definitely Melissa McBride's acting showcase. And that's definitely a real moment where you're realizing that the Carol of the show is such a strong, action-packed, sort of Ellen Ripley, Sarah Connor type of character that is very wildly different, as you already said, from the Carol of the comics, who is just, I mean, really depressing. You know, it's a really depressing story that plays out with her, and it plays out really fast. I love Carol. Are you a big Carol fan?
Oh, Carol is my favorite.
Okay, great. We're on the same page here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big Carol fan. Love Carol. I think Carol is probably the most interesting character in the show.
Yeah. And like I've heard criticisms that she can be kind of over the top, and I see it, but it's also like, why are you so hell bent on getting realism in your zombie apocalypse show?
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Who else do you like? Who are some of your favorites? Let's do like a top 5 on the board. So Carol's number 1. Who else do you have?
Well, I have some minor characters that I love.
Okay, cool.
Like, I love Eugene.
Yes.
Like, he has that one really creepy moment, but other than that, like, he's entertaining. And
like, when he's spying on Abraham, yes, and Rosita?
Yeah.
No one's getting hurt, as he says, right? Awkward.
Yeah, and it gets, like, amazingly, comics manage to make that even more awkward.
I know. Well, I don't think, like, Kirkman doesn't have anyone in the writer's room with him in the comics being like, yo, Kirkman, that's awkward. That's probably not the right way to go. I think that the story is probably a little bit helped by the fact that there's multiple writers being like, let's steer that back a bit.
Yeah, not so much. And I love Glenn and Maggie. I think they have the best relationship, and it's weird. It's like the closest to the comics, I think, is the Glenn-Maggie dynamic. It really doesn't really shift all that much. And I love the two of them together. And yeah, I'm a big Daryl Dixon fan.
Of course. I love Daryl Dixon.
He crept up on me too. Like, he annoyed me the first couple of seasons. And like, you know, this guy's kind of a douche and he's, you know, redneck jerk. Not really my people. But all of a sudden, like, weirdly around the time he and Beth got trapped together for a while, I realized he's just a really great guy, and he's had a rough hand dealt to him. And ironically, the zombie apocalypse is probably better than whatever he was doing before.
Yeah. Have you, now that you're all caught up in Walking Dead, have you gone back and watched Angie Kontz's deep dive into Daryl Dixon by any chance?
No, I haven't yet.
Strongly recommend you do that. And if you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about, Angie Kontz, great friend of the show, huge, huge Walking Dead fan, does not read the comics, only watches the show. She did a really amazing sort of deep dive YouTube video series on the arc of Daryl. And after watching that, and I got to talk through it with her a little bit, there's a podcast on that from over the summer, from summer 2015. After watching that series, I really found a new appreciation for Daryl, because she really dug in deep on that character. So that's fun. If you like Daryl, and if you found yourself liking him more around season 4, that's not by accident, I don't think. So you should check that out. I think you'd like to watch that.
I think I would very much. And my favorite relationship on the show, hands down, is Daryl and Carol.
What's your take on it? You know, everyone wants to know, is it a romantic thing? Is it a mother-son thing? Are they just best friends? What's your take on the dynamic?
I don't see it as romantic at all. I love it, and I joke around that I ship it. It's my OTP, but they're both such damaged individuals. I don't think they're necessarily looking for, like, you know, letters and sodas.
Right, yeah. I think that, you know, there was this great moment. I think it's the season 3 premiere when they are raiding the prison, but they're not, like, all the way in yet. They're trying to get into the prison for the first time, and they're in, like, the, you know, the outer courtyard, and they're camping out for the night. And what does Carol say? She's like, what, you want to fool around? And Daryl's like, stop, please. Yeah. And I think, like, that was really fun. And I think that sort of just that dynamic between the two of them has always been really great. Who do you not like so much? Who are the characters that you're not feeling?
Characters I'm not feeling. I think it's very much like Lost, and you know, you and I have very different approaches to Lost as well.
Yeah, but I came around on Miles. After my rewatch, I became a big Miles guy. So we're okay. We might be on the same page here.
Okay. Like, I think Rick Grimes is the least interesting character on The Walking Dead.
Interesting.
The same way that Jack Shepard was by leaps and bounds the least interesting character on Lost.
Why do you feel that way about Rick? What is it about Rick that just, and I guess, you know, just sort of, maybe it's that archetype. It's just like the main character. Is there something about that sort of role that just doesn't speak to you?
Yeah, I guess it is sort of that role. It's like he's the leader, and he's the one, like, you need him to drive the plot forward. But the interesting things are all the things that happen to him and not necessarily the things that he does.
Right.
And he makes decisions, and they're, like, to the credit of, I think, mostly Kirkman, Rick makes a lot of really terrible decisions, and he does some really stupid things that make you want to yell at the screen all the time. But he's really, at the end of the day, he's not the character I keep looking forward to. Like, what's he going to do next? Like, I don't care if he ever gets laid. I don't care if he ever becomes the leader of his group, and I don't care. You know, I recognize the series can't exist without him, but he's not the one I look forward to hearing from.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a pretty interesting character, but I think it took a while to get there. I thought that I really wasn't, and I love Rick in the comics. I think that Rick is really interesting in the comics, and I like him a lot more now on the show, and that's in, you know, the past couple of seasons. I've started to really turn around in him, but I remember those first two seasons, and season two especially, I was just such a Shane guy, because Shane was so interesting and so angry all the time, and he was always, you know, he was so vocal and loud and mean, and I just love John Bernthal. I think he's a great actor, and he was just the more dynamic of the two for me, and I was just waiting for them to kind of turn Rick into, you know, have him stop being such a Boy Scout. And I think right around then he starts getting really interesting after he kills Shane. I thought that that was a great change from the comic to the show. Rather than have Carl be the one who kills Shane, have Rick do it. That's a big personal achievement. I don't know if achievement's the right word, but it's a big move for him that really changes his character a lot. And he goes through the ringer in season three with, you know, the show moved up the Laurie thing, and that happens really early. So he's really emotionally distraught throughout most of season three. So that can be a little difficult to get through. But I think starting with season four and onward, for me, he's been a really compelling character. But it took a while. I'm glad he has his hand on the show. That's another change that I feel like is good. Did you know that they were going to lop his hand off in the comic, or was that a surprise?
That was a surprise. And that was kind of a WTF moment. Like, yes. Why do that? That's just going to make his life more difficult. Like, now he can't button shirts. Yeah. You know, it's just, and it's kind of closing off. And I've read that Kirkman regrets having done that now. Just
he does.
Because it closes off a lot of options for Rick. And he's better off with two hands.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the later stage comics, you know, around the, you know, after the time jump and everything, Rick has, you know, he has kind of like the makeshift prosthetic thing, and like, that's close, but like, for a long time, he's just running around with a stump, and that's really hard for your main character who's supposed to be an action hero. So I think to convey that, you know, there's a lot of things that they can get away with in the comic because, you know, it's just lines on paper versus a live action TV show. I think, first off, the budget would be really difficult to hide that hand for many, many seasons, and I think just like some of the things that he practically has to do, I think would be challenging. So good move to keep the hand on the show. I don't think that they're ever going to ditch it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this raises an interesting thing that you and I kind of wish we'd done this podcast before episode 9, because then I would get to be right. Because you and I went back and forth on what we thought would happen to Carl's eye.
Yes.
And I said that, you know, now that we've had this mid-season thing, I think we're going to come back strong and we're going to see Carl lose his eye at, you know, probably at the hands of Ron Douche, who's learned how to use Chekhov's gun. Like, he's not going to not shoot somebody. He's probably going to shoot Carl.
Yep. Yeah.
And you didn't agree with me.
Well, I didn't know. You know, I think that my thing was, and let's just start diving into this episode now, because this was a big thing that we had been waiting to see. You know, people who knew that this was coming up, that Carl loses his eye around this point in the story. You know, Alexandra comes under attack. This is the No Way Out arc that episode 9 of season 6 gets its name from. And, you know, the zombies are coming in and everyone is scattered and everyone's spread out, and it seems like pandemonium. It seems like, once again, like they left the prison, they're going to have to leave Alexandria. And in the heat of the chaos, Jesse and her son, who is only Ron, there's no Sam in the comic, it's just condensed as one character, they die very similar to how they do on the show. We'll talk through the exact mechanics of that. And then Douglas Monroe, who's Deanna on the show, Douglas is an old man version of Deanna in the comics. He, you know, he's going crazy and he's shooting off a gun, and Carl gets hit in the eye, and there's just this unbelievably grotesque two-page spread of Carl Grimes with just like a gaping, unbelievably unrealistic, unsurvivable hole in his head in the comics that, you know, you had to wonder if they were going to go there on the show. Would they be that savage? Would they be that brutal with a kid on the show? As we found out on Sunday night, absolutely they will be that brutal. But I think my big reason for why I wasn't sold on the fact that it would happen, first off, I didn't know who would do it. I didn't know if it would be Ron Douche. That seemed like smart money, but I didn't know if someone else was going to get killed. I thought maybe that the show would do a mixed thing where Father Gabriel, who had been acting all Rambo-like, I thought that maybe he would get mobbed by walkers and just start shooting like crazy, and maybe he would shoot Carl. But the other thing I was thinking was that Carl getting shot in the face – I really thought that that would be cliffhanger material for the, you know, for the first half of season six, to end on that note and have us wait, you know, 2 months on that note, having to come back and wondering, you know, either wondering what was going to happen to Carl, or like being left with this note of, oh my God, they killed Carl. I really thought that that's where they were going to go. And the fact that they didn't do that really said to me that maybe they just weren't going to do it at all. I was really happy to be proven wrong. I'm really glad they went there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I could see the rationale for not ending it on that beat, which is that they have ended an episode on a cliffhanger of Carl getting shot and everybody thinking he's dead before.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. Season two, I think, is that the season two premiere?
I'm
pretty sure it's close, or maybe it's episode one or episode two, because that's the lead in to the farm.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there are two seasons of The Walking Dead. There's the one I watched last month and the one I'm watching now. So
yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be useless on that.
Well, no, that's kind of interesting, because you haven't had to suffer through weeks of waiting for episodes. Like, you haven't had to suffer through the week to week, and you haven't had to suffer through like a long off season. That's going to be fun.
Oh,
good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I didn't have to deal with, like, you know, the episode where you'd go to the hospital and find out what Beth was up to.
Right.
If I'd had to wait a whole extra week to find out what happened to the people I really cared about, I would have been really upset. But
yeah,
I had to wait an hour. So
I think that that's where a lot of when Rob and I critique the show, and when we critique the pacing of the show, I think a lot of it does come down to that on the week to week, it doesn't always play out so great. But I have heard from people like you who have watched the show just as a binge, like as their first experience with Walking Dead, and certainly, you know, with the Walking Dead comic as well. If you can just read it all in one shot, that it just goes really lightning fast. I just don't have that experience, because I've been watching it week to week. So we were talking about the pacing of the first half of season six being a little problematic.
Oh yeah. Like, I would have been so angry.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out if Glenn is alive or dead, and I get to sit through 90 minutes of Tabitha the Goat. No,
I know.
Screw that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough. It was definitely tough. But I mean, at least they came back with a really action-packed mid-season premiere. So I'm not too hung up on the fact that I thought that that stuff should have happened in the finale. We did get a really explosive episode here in the mid-season premiere in No Way Out. What was your reaction when you got to Carl getting shot in the comics? Had you heard that this was happening, or was this a complete surprise to you?
That was a complete surprise. And I mean,
was your reaction? Because you read that page, like, you have to think that he's dead.
Yeah, it's so gross, too. It's like one of the grossest things in a very, very gross series.
Yes.
Like, you know, this is the same series where there's like intestines strewn around like pretty much every page.
Yes. Yeah.
And then this is, I guess it's striking because you know Carl, like, you're familiar with Carl. He's kind of like your friend.
Yeah.
And then you just open the page on this incredibly close-up, gruesome shot where he's missing half his face. And I knew that, like, he was going to be different if he survived it at all. But I also knew, like, in this universe, people survive a lot of really bad stuff. So
yeah. Well, I remember reading it, you know, it came out in 2011, that issue. And I remember reading it, and it was kind of, you know, not to spoil Game of Thrones at all, but there is an iconic moment in Game of Thrones, which I will initial RW. And it's a very big nuclear bomb that gets dropped in that book series. It happens in, you know, one of the middle books. And a lot of people have stories about, you know, getting to that chapter and throwing the book across the room, burning the book, getting so angry that they can't read for a week. And I remember the Carl thing. I have a lot of friends who read the comics who had similar reactions of being like, this is the uncrossable line. You crossed that line. Can't keep going with it. For me, I got to that page. I was reading it on Comixology, because I've been, you know, I now read Walking Dead digitally. I read most of my comics digitally these days. And I didn't even think to keep pushing forward. Like, I didn't think to like turn the page after that spread. I thought that was just the end of the issue. And I thought that they had ended that issue with Carl being dead. And I was really floored by that. I felt like he was an untouchable character. I couldn't believe that they went there. Obviously, he makes it out of there alive. And I ended up reading the next couple of pages of it where it's like, oh, he's still in the mix. So it wasn't like a completely, completely no hope at all savage ending, but it was really savage. And a lot of people had really big reactions to that. That was like, and again, Walking Dead Book Club is super spoilery, so this is like the spoiler, but this was like the pre-Glenn reaction. This was like, this was the bombshell before the Walking Dead 100 moment. So, they had to include it on the show, you know, in retrospect. Like, it's just a moment that really needs to happen. It really fuels Carl's arc moving forward. He really gets a lot darker after this. So just looking back on it, there's really just no way that they couldn't have gone here.
Yeah, no, they definitely needed it to happen. And I think the comic also points to how they're going to handle the practical effects of this. Like, you know, is he going to have a governor-style eye patch? Is he going to wrap his face up in gauze? I think for a long time in the comic, he just grows his hair really long over that one eye, sort of a Veronica Lake thing going on. I think we're going to see that happening. He's going to be very emo.
Yeah. No, they've been talking about that. You know, there's, you know, after this episode, there was a lot of press with Kirkman and Scott Gimple, who's the showrunner, and Greg Nicotero, who does the makeup effects, and even Chandler Riggs, who plays Carl. All of these people are talking to the press about this episode. And one of the things they're saying is, like, we've been having Chandler grow his hair out specifically for this reason, because we knew the eye thing was coming up. You know, him having long hair that he can kind of drape over his eye is going to make things a little easier for him, where hopefully he will not have to wear any sort of cover up on his eye at that point. But you know, they definitely did just like add a new expense to their budget, because you can't walk that back. That's, you know, heavy face makeup that you're gonna have to break out at least several times a season. You know, that's a thing that you can't back up from now with Carl. But I like it. I think it's gonna be good. I think that some sort of big dramatic shift for Carl on the show was really necessary to get him to be kind of the little runty badass that he becomes in the comics from this point forward.
Yeah. And he's really, he needed something like that to happen to him, because I think for a very long time, he's been kind of just like mini Rick.
Yeah.
And he needs to diverge from that to become his own person.
Yeah, I think so. The other big thing that, you know, precedes that is everything that happens to Sam. Sam getting eaten in front of Jesse, and then Jesse getting eaten, and then Ron Douche freaking out and busting out the gun and getting stabbed by Michonne. How did you like how that played out on the show versus how it played out in the comics?
Well, there's one thing I hate and the rest of it I love. And the thing I hate was that they cut it off at the end of the previous episode in a way that suggested they were going to have it happen exactly the same way it did in the comics. Like, you know, the little whiny kid is like, mom, mom, mom. And it attracts the walkers, and the walkers eat the little kid, and the walkers eat the mom, and hack, hack, hack.
Right.
Yeah. But they just kind of dropped that thread entirely. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden, yeah, they made it. And now it's nighttime. And now we're just going to do that same beat again, only this time the walkers are going to eat the kid and the mom, and hack, 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 and Carl's eye is gone in the end.
It was a little bizarre. It was a little bizarre that they went that way. You would have thought that, you know, I think it was strange. We'll talk about the Daryl, you know, cold open with the rocket launcher and everything, because how can we not? Because it was so great. But like when the episode was starting that way, I was surprised by that. I was surprised that that's where they were beginning. I really thought that at the very least, if they weren't going to have all of that be in the final scene of the mid-season finale, I thought at the very least that they were just going to like rock out right out of the gate with, you know, Carl getting blasted in the eye, and Sam's mom freak out, having all that stuff happen right there. And for them to save that for the middle of the episode for a nighttime scene, I did think that was weird.
Yeah,
I thought that was strange.
Really awkward.
Yeah, I thought that the timing, the pacing on it was a little bizarre. And one thing that I really missed from the page to the screen, it's, you know, maybe it's a subtle difference, maybe it's a small difference, but to me it's a big deal, is the way that Rick deals with Jesse. You know, Jesse is in the comic, she's freaking out, she's seeing her son, it's just Ron in the comic, she's watching this happen to him. It's a really gross panel, the panel where Ron is getting eaten. It's just like, it's very similar to what it is on the show, where just like there's like teeth going into like the top of his head, where it's like kind of hard to break through there, and just like, oh, that's so horrible. But you know, Jesse, it's broad daylight, Jesse is watching it happen, she's still kind of able to talk a little bit, and Rick is like, Jesse, we gotta go. And then she gets mobbed, and she's calling for Rick as the zombies are swarming her, and she's still holding on to Carl as she is on the show, and Rick kind of has to make the choice of, you know, cleaving her hand off, but he has to do it while making eye contact with her, basically. Like, he basically has to look her in the eye and make the choice of, it's my son instead of you, you're a lost cause, I'm chopping your hand off, goodbye, Jesse. That's it. And it was definitely like, I think that the show, and maybe it was the right call. I don't know. I'm a pretty morbid guy. I feel like the show kind of absolved him of having to make like the really, really, really grungy choice of having to like say goodbye to Jesse while looking at her while chopping her hand off to save Carl's life.
Yeah, it's true. Like the zombies kind of got in his line of sight. So he didn't have to deal with that. And he didn't really get that speech about how we're all going to split into small groups and other people's kids don't matter because they're other people's kids. And ironically, Rick says it in the comics and the governor says it on the show.
Right. Yeah, it's true. It's a good point. Yeah. So he has that in the, yeah, it's a great, I think that's the end of an issue. In fact, I think is where he's like, yeah, Jesse, just so you know, it's like, we're the important crew here. Like, yeah, we'll save everyone else if we can, but we're the ones that we're looking out for number one here. And that ends up being pretty prophetic when he is, you know, saying that. And he says to her something to the effect of like, if it's somebody else or my kid wins every time. You know, it's like a real Walter White-ism that he like gives to like Jesse Pinkman. It's like, I'm going to take my kid every single time. If it's them or us, it's us. We win. And it ends up being like, he said that to her and then he just goes ahead and hacks her hands off. So I really liked it on the show, but it was, you know, I missed the daylight aspect. I do wish that it had just connected to the mid-season finale. And I don't know what it says about me, Jess, but I wish that it was a little gnarlier towards Jesse. I think that might say I'm a bad person.
Well, it should be gnarly. I think it should be gnarly. It should be difficult. It should be awkward and painful. And on the show, it's just like, oh, well, this hand is holding on to my son. I should probably get rid of it. You know,
right.
It needs to be more difficult. It needs to be visceral because it's cutting off a goddamn hand, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big deal. Yeah. What did you think of, you know, the other really big thing from the comics that is represented in the show in this past episode is Rick's, you know, stand and the stand of Alexandria versus the zombies. And, you know, it plays out pretty differently on the show in certain respects. There's no lake of fire. In the comics, there's no Daryl Dixon coming along with a rocket launcher. I mean, this is what happens when you don't have Daryl Dixon in the comics. There's going to be no one to show up with a rocket launcher to save everybody's butt. But on the show, you get, you know, explosives. You get pyrotechnics.
Yeah, you get a little bit. I thought it was a little bit more overt on the show that, like, all of a sudden, all these people that Rick saw as kind of weak and expendable all stepped up and, like, showed him what they were capable of. And I thought that was way more overt on the show. And maybe it's just because of the two different storytelling mediums, because I think that was kind of the arc that we were getting in the comics.
Yeah. No, I think it was, you know, I think Rick's concern about the Alexandrians and like their readiness and their ability to survive in this world, I feel like that's heightened more on the show than in the comics. I mean, you've read these issues more recently than I have, but that's my memory of them at least, is that he's not like as freaked out about Alexandria's ability to make it in this world as he is on the show. I mean, he's mistrusting, he's paranoid. He definitely has that moment where he says, we'll just get the guns and we'll take this place over if we have to do it. But, you know, on the show, I feel like there's this big arc in the first half of season six has been Rick having to come to terms with the fact that these are his people, and can he accept that or not? And I think that that was really heightened on the show and paid off in a really big way in the mid-season premiere.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, ironically, on the show, it's less of an issue. Like, I think in the comics, it's pretty clear that he's thinking they're going to all split and go their separate ways and leave Alexandria behind. But he doesn't seem to be wanting to do that as much on the show. Like, he's already, like, this is my home. I'm going to protect it. Not like I need to get the hell out of here and, you know, not die.
Right. Yeah. I think another thing too, that's interesting. I was just rereading, you know, the last issue in No Way Out today before we got on here. And, you know, when Rick goes and he brings Carl to Denise and he's like, save him. He's all I got left. Do what you can. And Denise is like, well, it's going to get pretty loud in here. I got to turn on the lights. I got to turn on some shit. And Rick's like, that's fine. I'll go kill all the walkers while you do that. You just save my kid. And I think that there's like a little bit more of desperation to Rick in the comics in that moment where he's just like, I'm going to be like the last line of defense for my kid right now while she saves my kid. And on the show, I don't know if it felt this way to you, but for me, it almost felt more like just like a blind rage.
Yeah. It's like what Tyrese does.
Right. Like he had a total like Hammertown moment where he's just like, I'm going to pull a Tyrese here and I'm just going to town on these people.
Yeah, I'm angry, so I'm going to go take it out on some dead things.
Yeah, so that was the move there. But one of the things that I thought was cool, you know, we talked about this on the live show with Rob the other night. You know, he was talking a little bit about how like he wanted more of the wide shot of like the big fight between the Alexandrians and the Walkers. And I had said that I really liked, you know, the quick cuts between different people and seeing the red shirts and kind of seeing how that sort of meant that like everyone was sort of blending together and they were more of a cohesive unit. But what was cool, I hadn't remembered this, but when you go back and you read that issue in No Way Out, you know, the panels are a lot like those quick cuts. There are, you know, there's like a 16 panel grid on a double page spread mm-hmm. at one point, and there's like a 7 panel grid at one point where it's just all these like tight close-ups on people's faces. And that's a lot of what Charlie Adlar, the artist of The Walking Dead, does to begin with. He does a lot of just shots from like the shoulders and up of people's heads. There's a lot of talking heads in The Walking Dead. And I thought that it was a really kind of visually faithful moment in the Alexandrian fight on the show to the comics. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Although it did sort of remind me a little bit of like those scenes in the basement on that 70s show where they're all high.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that might have helped, you know, yeah. Just like to like chill everybody out, you know.
Yeah, who knows?
Just like dull the senses a little bit before you go out there. Get a little bit of that, I don't know, some of that hazy courage. But yeah, I mean, I guess like Eugene got some of that hazy courage, and Father Gabriel too, who both in the comics, they're out there as well. But I feel like in the comics, Father Gabriel is very reluctantly out there. I think someone's like, hey, Father Gabriel, we got to go out there right now. And he's kind of like, ah, shit. All right, fine, I'll do it. Whereas Eugene, you know, Eugene, both on the show and in the comics, he has this great line that I was really happy to see that it mostly made it to the show. In the comics, he's like being told by, I think it's Abraham, who's like, yo, Eugene, go inside. You do not want to be here. And he says to Abraham, he says, this is a story people are going to tell. I'm a part of this. I'm not giving up. And they give that moment, instead of Abraham, they give it to Rosita in the episode where she's basically being like, Eugene, just stay here. Read your book. You're going to be fine. And Eugene says, incorrect. No one gets to clock out today. Besides, this is a story people are going to tell. So I'm glad that they gave Eugene sort of like his action hero line.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing I love about Eugene is he always wants to be that badass, but he feels like he doesn't have it in himself, whereas Gabriel doesn't want any part of that. Like, that's right. The difference between, like, most shows would just have one character who's a total pussy, but we got two, and they approach it in very different ways.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the divide is. I mean, because, like, Eugene is the lovable craven, and Father Gabriel is, like, the guy who was so cowardly that everybody hated Father Eugene. And I think Father Gabriel, I would love to see Father Eugene. I feel like Father Gabriel, there wasn't really any sort of redeeming quality, whereas at least Eugene was funny. He was quippy. You know, he has great dialogue. He has hilarious hair. And Father Gabriel is just always, you know, he's always screwing things up. He's narking out to Deanna. So I don't know. And I feel like maybe the show is turning Father Gabriel, like trying to really do more of like an intentional redemption arc with him in this episode, where he's the guy who like turns to the Alexandrians being like, we've been praying to God to show us the way. He's shown us the way, and the way is we have the courage to do this ourselves. And he has like sort of this really active role in, you know, galvanizing some of the Alexandrians to go out there and help Rick, whereas he's kind of just being pulled outside in the comics. And I think that even now in the comics, he's not exactly like, you know, he's not like a least favorite character, but he's not anybody's favorite character probably. But I feel like the negative reaction to Father Gabriel on the show is a lot more negative than the reaction to him in the comics, and maybe the show wanted to course correct with him a little bit sooner.
Yeah. In the comics, he's just kind of, after a point, he's just sort of there. It's like, oh, well, let's walk through the neighborhood, there's the church, hi Father Gabriel, and he doesn't really do anything,
right? Yeah,
so
pretty much
this is much better.
Yeah, no. So this is good. The big change here, as we alluded earlier, is it's the Daryl Dixon factor. And I feel like the Daryl Dixon factor is always the fun thing that shakes things up. Like, you just don't know how a thing is going to go if Daryl Dixon is involved in a really important scene. And so he shows up here. He's part of the crew with Abraham and Sasha. They show up to save everybody. And since Daryl Dixon has lost his crossbow, he's gained a rocket launcher, and that's his new signature weapon. And I think I'm okay with this right now. I think I'm good. Like, if he doesn't have the crossbow and he just has a rocket launcher that he just rocket launches at people all the time, I would be good with that.
Well, that could get a little expensive.
It could get expensive, but it would be fun.
I mean, the practicality of the crossbow is you can, like, pull your arrows out and reuse them.
You can't withdraw a missile and stuff it back in. But it was great for this episode, at least, that he got to fire that thing not once, but twice. What did you think of him coming in here and having, like, that awesome Lake of Fire moment?
Well, I loved the first time he fired it, because it really...
That was great.
It felt like they were backed into a corner, and I thought... Well, obviously, Daryl's going to have to take that guy back there and kill him and get his weapon and save the day, but I didn't see it going down exactly like that. It was just sort of instantaneous. They were all just flattened. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that was really good. I did not know how they were going to get out of that situation. Like, when he said on second thought, you know what, maybe I will just kill you guys. And right before they all blow up, I actually kind of thought that maybe he was going to go through with it. Because, you know, in the comics, Abraham is not much longer for life past this point where we are on the show. I thought that they could have done that here. I thought that that could have been the big surprise in the first few minutes of this premiere. I was definitely worried for him. And then Daryl just blows up the whole situation in sort of this amazing way.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed a little bit because they were teasing, like, there's going to be character deaths and explosions and it's going to be amazing. And the character deaths we got were Negan's biker gang.
Right.
And, you know, the entire Porchdick family, which we knew was going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the wolf. And that was all. I was waiting for, like, an actual major character that we cared about to die.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't happen.
And I thought it was going to be Abraham, like, because we saw that teaser and they say, you know, we're going to pop one of you. And I assumed it was going to be Abraham because that's very similar to how he goes out in the comics.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, someone on the Negan crew now, because the guy who may or may not be Dwight from that episode with Daryl does take the crossbow. That's out there in the universe. That is how Abraham goes. It's just like an arrow through the back of the head, and he at least gets to finish his monologue. So you never know. That could still make it onto the show. That could be something that we're getting in the back half of season 6. I don't know. I'm worried for Abraham. I'm definitely nervous for that guy. But I thought maybe it would happen in this premiere.
Yeah, well, I mean... This is a question of pacing, really, but who are you more worried for this season, Abraham or Glenn?
Well, that's great. So let's talk about this. I think that this is like one of the last really big things we should get into is they've been teasing out the Glenn thing forever. I don't know like how much did you know about the Glenn death as you were watching the show, or that was something you got to in the comic?
That was something I got to in the comic.
Okay. So did you, you know, like if you go back and you think about some of the things from season 5, like in the very first episode when they're lined up at the trough in Terminus, mm-hmm. and there's a guy standing behind him that's about to bash his head in with a baseball bat, you know, that's obviously very evocative of how he actually dies in the comics. There's even another moment, I think, in the season 5 mid-season premiere when they're going back to Noah's hometown, the episode where Tyrese dies and Glenn has some sort of encounter with a baseball bat, or he's picking up baseball bat. So they've definitely been flaunting it. I think even like the people involved with the show have been somewhat candid about the Glenn thing. Like they address it because it's something that they get asked about a lot. It's such a big moment from the books that they, you know, they know that people know that this is a thing that might happen. But the scary thing, like the nightmare thing, is you don't know if it'll happen to Glenn or not. You got to imagine that whenever they have Negan show up on the show, it will be to bash in somebody's brains with a baseball bat. Lucille is coming. That's happening. The question is, does it happen to Glenn or not? And I think that one of the big arguments for people who have read the comics and have knowledge of what happens to Glenn shortly after this point that we're at in the story of the show is that they spent, you know, the first half of season 6 kind of teasing, like, is he or is he not dead? And for me, I don't, and I'd love to hear where you land on this. For me, it's hard to imagine that, like, now they pull the trigger or swing the bat, as it were, on Glenn having gone through that story. Or was that, you know, like a training exercise, like get people used to the idea that Glenn might not be on the show for very long? So I don't know. I don't know where I land in terms of is Glenn definitely going to die the way that he dies in the comics. But I'd love to get your take on this.
Well, I think something that I think would be very genius is if we get that scene, but they choose some other person at random and kill them, because it brings in that element of surprise. And then we are all surprised whether or not we've read the comics. And, you know, Lucille's coming for somebody, but she doesn't need to come for Glenn necessarily. And I don't know what you do with Glenn after that point, but, you know, there's plenty of people that are dead in the comics and alive on the show and vice versa. And, you know, if we can give Tyrese's death to Herschel, we can give Glenn's death to somebody else very easily. Right.
I do agree with you, though. Like, what is Glenn's story become? Because Maggie's story becomes so much about losing Glenn and then, you know, really finding, you know, new strength and becoming a leader, and all of that stuff happens for Maggie after Glenn's death. So her story really in the comics is pretty dependent on the death of Glenn. So I don't know how having Glenn around would change things. Would it, you know, I don't know. There's so much that you got, like, the butterfly effect on that one is pretty huge. But I am, you know, keeping an eye on Glenn. And I think that this is something that would be fun for us to track as we go through this back half of season six, is like the moments that they are giving to Glenn that, like, tip the hand of, like, yeah, we're going to lose Glenn. Like, I feel like, are there story points that we can watch now where it's seemingly clear that Glenn only has a certain amount of episodes left on the show? And I think there may have been one in this past episode, in episode 9, you know, the big scene with him and Enid in the church where he's talking about the people you carry with you, who have shaped you, who have formed you, who you carry with you. It's my mom. It's my dad. It's a guy named Dale. It's Maggie's father. You know, it's all these people who, you know, have mattered to me and have saved my life, and I keep going for them. And Enid, you know, so far only has her parents. And he's giving her that line, and you get the sense that Enid is kind of becoming a little bit of a Sophia from the comics, where she's sort of maybe possibly being positioned as some sort of surrogate daughter figure to Glenn and Maggie. And you could see that if Glenn is the guy who goes, like, you could see the story material for someone like Enid, and you can look back at that moment where he is saying those words, where that's going to hang heavy over the story, perhaps, if he does get Lucille out of this thing.
Yeah, I could see, like, that definitely being a new person for her on that list.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that that could be something to watch out for. But I think just, like, moments like that, anytime that Glenn is talking about, like, the goodness of people and how you have to carry on for the dead, like, I'm freaked out when I hear that. Like, I'm worried for Glenn at that point.
Oh, can I make another totally off base pop culture association here?
Yes.
This is like Crispin Glover's character in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Okay.
Because you see him in the future in his, and he's missing an arm. And so they spend the entire movie, like, holding their breath to see what happens to his arm.
Right. Yeah.
And he, like, juggles chainsaws and nothing happens. And, like, he gets attacked by a bear and nothing happens. And he keeps the arm until, like, the very end of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like there's this quality of holding your breath and just waiting for a baseball bat to land on Glenn's head, because we know that might be happening. And it's very similar to that. And I think that's a really funny meta reference of, like, oh, how's that going to happen? And I think it's something that we need to be watching, is like how they're setting up that story. And I think that there's arguments for it. There's arguments against it. And, you know, if it's not Glenn, then it becomes a question of, like, who gets that spot? You know, do you have somebody in mind who you think would take his place if it's not Glenn, if they do remix it? Because I think it is interesting. It is an eeny, meeny, miny, mo that chooses Glenn's fate in the comics. And if that were to translate onto the show and Negan does an eeny, meeny, miny, mo and picks somebody else because of just the randomness of the draw, who do you think it could possibly land on?
Well, I've got two theories. One is that if Abraham doesn't go out the way that he goes out in the comics, he could go out this way. And the other thing, I've heard people speculate, there's some speculation on, like, the previously TV message boards, that it could be how Daryl goes out. And I think Daryl is the safest person on the show other than Rick, but if they were going to kill him off the show, they'd give him a big important death like this.
Right. Yeah. You know, once upon a time, I used to think that what happened to Herschel on the show, what happened to Tyrese in the comics, I thought that's where they were going to go with Daryl. I thought that Daryl would be the guy that the governor was going to chop his head off and, like, incite this whole big emotional second half of season four. I really thought that that's where they were going to go, because that kill, you know, that death has to go to somebody that the audience really, really loves and doesn't want to see go, certainly not in that way. And I think that for whoever does get Lucille'd, I feel like it has to be a character of huge, huge importance. And there aren't too many people in my mind that are of tremendous importance that are also killable. I don't think you could kill Michonne like that.
No.
I don't think you couldn't kill Rick like that. We're not going to kill Carl like that. He's got too much more to do. I mean, obviously you can kill Glenn like that. Arguably, could you kill Maggie like that? I don't think so, because she's pregnant, and that's probably too far even for The Walking Dead. But that would be a subversion of the Glenn and Maggie thing. You know, we were talking about like how does that story go if Glenn's not in the mix? How does it go if Maggie's not in the mix and Glenn is sort of in that role? I don't think that they could do that.
No, they couldn't. It would also be kind of unfeminist. And
yes,
I think at every turn, and this is something we probably don't have time to get into in depth, but I think at every turn where the show has had an opportunity to make things a little bit more feminist than they are in the comics, it has taken that. So they would never take a major role away from a woman who's going to have a pretty great character arc in the comics. They wouldn't just give that away to her husband.
Yeah, so I think that Maggie is okay, and I think that really leaves, you could argue Abraham. I don't know if Abraham has become, you know, fan favorite enough to have that role. I think people do love Abraham, but would that be like the huge, huge shock that everybody is left reeling from going, you know, into the summer waiting for season 7? I think that maybe not. I feel like Morgan, who's been a season 1 character, you know, somebody that we've known on the whole show, and maybe that's where his arc is going this season with the whole I can't kill, there's got to be a better way. Does he kind of get, you know, does he sort of get, you know, put on this pedestal of, you know, him being sort of a symbol for Rick moving forward? If he takes the Glenn death, he's pretty much, it's him, Glenn, or really Daryl. Those are really the top three that I can see that this could go to with. I could see it happening to Abraham, but I feel like that would be the softest of those four.
Yeah, yeah, and Morgan is already dead at this point in the comics.
Right. Yeah. No, he dies right here. You know, he could have, he dies in No Way Out. He's been bitten, during the attack. Michonne slices his arm off, cause that's what you do. And he does not make it, cause it's just like, she lops off the whole arm. It's just like probably too much. But yeah, he dies and he's gone. So, you know, there's not, you know, a ton of comic book precedent for what comes up next for Morgan.
Yeah, it's true. He's kind of expendable at this point.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. This is something that we do on the Walking Dead feedback shows. I know I'm going to do this with Rob tomorrow, where we do a death draft, which I feel is fair because I don't know necessarily who is going to make it and who is not going to make it. And I never pick Glenn, or at least I typically don't pick Glenn. I will not be picking Glenn during the show only death draft. But do you want to pick a Negan draft? Who is going to get Lucille'd? I'd be very curious if we could put some stakes on the board for this.
I like this idea. Let's All definitely right. do a Negan draft.
All right. So you are the guest of honor here, Jess. This is your first Walking Dead podcast. I give you first choice.
Okay. And are we just not going to pick Glenn because that's obvious? Because I'm down with like Glenn being off the table, like the Negan.
We could take Glenn off the table. We could take Glenn off the table and make it interesting. And, you know, if Glenn dies, then everybody saw it coming.
Yeah. Then Glenn dies, the house
wins. Who could replace
him?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So who do you got?
Okay. I'm going to go with Abraham.
Okay. You're going to go with Abraham first. Yeah, so you would see, I mean, that would be, it's really like, you know, the big macho evil guy versus the big macho good guy.
Yeah, exactly.
In that moment. So like there's like a definite visual that like you can picture it happening.
And it would be like he's such a badass. It would just be a really almost even more awful, humiliating death for him to go out like that.
Yeah, like you could also just like see Abraham being the type of guy who's just like, I mean, cause he's had kind of this death wish for a while now.
Yeah.
Where he's had this thing about him where he's like been like, you know, kind of like, just sending himself on suicide missions. It seems like he's mostly over that at this point, but he feels like the kind of guy that would be in that position and he would like, you know, he would have one final badass one liner, and it would be, you know, kind of like this big sort of, you know, Han Solo in Carbonite moment. If, you know, then Boba Fett disintegrated Han Solo's head
yeah.
in the Carbonite slab. So I'll take Daryl. I always take Daryl in these things. I feel like Daryl, you know, like, and I'm not trying to will it into existence because, I love Norman Reedus. I think that he's great. I agree with you. I do think that he is, you know, he is he is a really, it seems like he is the safest person on the show because he's so popular. He's so intensely popular. People love him. He, you know, he makes tons of money, like going to conventions and signing autographs and stuff. So Daryl Dixon has been a big part of his career, not just in terms of a great performance, but an actual cash cow for him. And he's the, you know, he's the main character in all these like iPhone games and stuff. So it's hard to imagine a world where AMC decides we're not going to keep Daryl Dixon on the show. Like, we're going to willingly let him go because that would be shocking and that would drive people crazy. But I kind of feel like if they want to have the impact of Walking Dead 100, which was an issue that I read it at Comic-Con. It came out at Comic-Con the year that it came out, and I was like dead for the rest of the day. and I was like, I couldn't work. I couldn't talk to anybody. I went to lunch immediately afterwards with like my colleagues who do not read the comic. They're like, why are you so like non-talkative right now? What's going on? It's like, I just read something upsetting. I can't talk. I can't talk yet. We'll talk later. So I think if they want to have that kind of impact, I feel like Daryl, it's hard to imagine somebody that would have a greater impact than Daryl. Like, that would be the big one. And there's this big X factor where we just have no idea where he's going because he's not in the comics at all. There's no roadmap for him. So I'll take Daryl. Do you think that there's any shot, or are you feeling he's pretty safe?
I'm feeling like he's pretty safe. Like, he'd have to have a lot more than a DUI to get written off the show.
Yeah. Yeah, to get the Michelle Rodriguez treatment. Yeah, it would take a little more than that. So let's take two total. So I'll take one more and then you get the last pick.
Okay.
And I'll go with Morgan for the reasons I outlined, that I feel like it could be the end of his arc. I feel like it could be the payoff of, you know, him being in the mix from season one and having this, you know, no kill policy now. And like, maybe that happening to him will somehow impact or inspire Rick moving forward. And there's also just, there's no road left for Morgan in the comics at this point. We have, you know, he doesn't have a role in the comics anymore. I also feel like Lenny James, you know, he's a great actor who's like, I'll be on The Walking Dead for a season. And then I'm done. You know, I'll come on full time and then I'll be out and I'll go do my next thing. So I'll take Morgan here.
Yeah. I'll go play the same character I played on Jericho on some other show.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll just go do that exact thing somewhere else.
Yeah, all right. So who else do we have left now? Like,
all right. Anybody. You could pick anyone. I mean, we've got, you know, is it going to be Eugene? Is it going to be?
Better not.
That would be hard. I mean, that would be, you know, not to make your pick for you, but to make the argument.
See him like looking up in like his stoic face, like, I regret that I must have to make this choice for the rest of my people.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Something like that, or even like, you know, like one of the horrible things about the Glenn thing is just like how he is, you know, afraid, like deathly afraid in his final moments where he's like, please don't do it. And he's like calling out for Maggie and everything. He's trembling and it's so horrible. And you could see Eugene going through something like that.
Yeah. Or here's one. This is a total long shot, but I could see it being someone like Aaron.
Okay.
Because Aaron is someone we kind of nominally care about. He's gotten some good character development. The actor that plays him is tremendous.
He's great.
He's the absolute best. And, you know, he and Daryl have had a friendship that's very unlikely and very interesting. And he hasn't had a lot to do lately.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see him, like, I believe in the comics at this point, his boyfriend dies. And he has some character development on that. But, you know, Eric is alive and well right now. So I could see Aaron being on this trip because I assume we're going to be like on the road to the hilltop at this point. And I could see Aaron being in that group and I could see him being the person that goes.
Well, speaking of the hilltop, and let's just close out by kind of previewing what's ahead. The preview for next week's episode, 10th episode of season 6, it looks like it's Rick and Daryl on the road. Kirkman and Scott Gimple have been describing this as like the lethal weapon of The Walking Dead is how they're touting this episode. So that's kind of fun. I don't know how much comic book stuff we'll end up talking about next week, but maybe it's going to be a fun deep dive into Daryl Dixon. But we're definitely getting into Hilltop stuff for, you know, I think probably pretty imminently. And that's probably going to be the thrust of the rest of season 6, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're probably not even going to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan until the very last episode.
I think it'll be the final scene. You know, yeah. I think that the final scene will be the Lucille thing, and then, you know, we'll get our Negan fix in the rest of season 7. Like, I feel like that'll be the all out war arc. But yeah, I think that we're heading into Hilltop stuff. That could happen as soon as next week. You could totally see Rick and Daryl running into Jesus next week.
Mm-hmm. And are we getting the kingdom this season?
Oh, I hope so.
Because this is where the show starts. This is where the comics really start to go off the rails for me. Like, here is a, you know, retired.
You're not into the tiger?
Retired zookeeper with a tiger on a freaking leash, and he falls in love with Michonne. Sure, great. And then we got people that wear zombie suits.
Yes. Well, the zombie suit, you know, that'll, the whisperers, like, that for me felt like that was created with the show in mind. Like, for me, that felt like the first thing that they did in the comics where Kirkman was like, I'm making a Walking Dead show, and one of these days we're going to have somebody pop up wearing walker skin, and that's going to be gross. So I feel like that will definitely hit the show at some point. I feel like it's too important not to. But is Ezekiel going to show up with a tiger on the show?
Please, please, can he?
I hope so.
Michonne needs some loving.
She does. Well, what do you think about the whole Michonne thing, which would be a departure from the comics? You know, Rick ends up with Andrea in the comics. A lot of people on the internet, people who watch Walking Dead, they're really into Rick and Michonne as a thing. Do you feel like the show is driving at that at all?
I don't think the show is driving at that. And, you know, nothing makes me not want to see people get together more than, like, an aggressive fan base of people insisting that the romance has to happen. And honestly, the one thing that I think is the biggest improvement on the show over the comics is that we don't have romantic psychodrama in every single episode with, like, this person sleeping with this person and this person cheating on this person and, you know, these people falling in love. And it really... I know that if this show was on HBO, they would be banging in every episode, but it's the one saving grace of basic cable is that you can't have sexual drama in every single episode. And I think the show is stronger for it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like that, you know, romance pretty much stays away from my Walking Dead unless it's like Glenn and Maggie. Which is good. Sometimes they get a little dramatic, like with this Abraham and Sasha thing going on that makes me really stressed out because Rosita is still in the mix. But that's true to the comics, I guess. So I don't know. We'll see. I think we're getting Hilltop pretty soon. I think that Hilltop is going to be the big deal for the rest of the season. Let's see what shakes out next week. But for now, Jess, this is good. I think good start.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think this is going to be good.
I think it's going to be fun. Do we have any ideas for a hashtag at the end of this thing?
You know, I really should start just writing down hashtags.
I think what would be good is hashtag Negan draft.
Yeah,
we could see what people think of our results on the Negan draft. Be conscious with those tweets if you tweeted us. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. I'm at Round Howard. Be conscious of your neighbor, people who do not know what's coming ahead on Walking Dead. Please, no major spoilers in your tweets. Just like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll know what you're talking about. But other than that, Jess, we'll talk again next week talking about season 6, episode 10 of Walking Dead.
I'm excited.
Good stuff. All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.